A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Thursday, 13th of August 2020. We shall be continuing with our sharing on the Heart Sutta, second edition. We are at page 180. So you, as usual, have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. The posture is up to you. It can be in any posture. You can sit cross-legged. You sit. You can either sit on a chair or couch or even lean against a wall. Whatever posture that is stable that can enable you to meditate, use it. For those who are familiar with the lying down posture, you can also use that lying down posture. So all this is up to you. When you lie down, you remember the four support, relax, maintain awareness. But if you are too tired, you need to rest or fall asleep, you can relax and sleep. Then you become fresh. But try to maintain awareness. The moment you are without awareness, you actually do so. So meditation is to be in a state of awareness without thought. So relax, maintain awareness, that's it. And let things be. Whatever thinking, sankhara activity, they will slow down and finally cease. So you're supposed to observe all this, understand and stabilize that nature. We call it the awareness nature within. That is your silent mind. That is your meditative mind that can allow you to understand many things. It can enable you to meditate. So do it. For those who still need the mind sweeping method combined with metta and object of meditation to anchor your mind to develop the sati, is up to you. If your spiritual faculty is there, you don't have to do all this. These are only required for those who don't have the spiritual faculty developed. Their ability to train their mind to have the spiritual faculty is still not there, not stable. And it's also sometimes a good routine to pay respect to triple jam before you start your meditation. And those who are used to bowing, you continue your bowing, and after a minute or two you can start your meditation. Then those who cannot settle down, you want to mindfully do the walking, it's up to you. And whatever that can allow you to train your mind to be in a relaxed state or inner awareness, use it. You can be seated and just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. Then we will continue from where we stopped, page 180. The last paragraph we will go through again so that you can remember what we discussed. We were going through the topic, how to develop heedfulness to enable us to meditate. So the development of heedfulness is very important. How to develop the heedfulness needed to cultivate the meditation. Then to decondition the heedless thinking, we use the mind sweeping method as a skillful means to train the mind to just feel and relax, no more thinking. As we sweep the mind through our body, starting from the forehead all the way down. This will allow the mind to naturally relax and calm down on its own. We can also combine it with the radiating of metta or loving kindness to develop the inner well-being and wholesome state of mind to enhance our meditation. After the mind sweeping method and metta training, our mind should be more calm, more peaceful, and relax. Then we can use it to develop sati, the silent mind with inner awareness via anapanasati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath training as taught by the Buddha in his Kayanupassana practice. After that, when sati is already quite stable, we should move on to the mindfulness of the four posture, followed by sati sampajana, or the daily mindfulness with clear comprehension training, as described in the Kayanupassana's six category of practices. Once sati is established, use it to cultivate the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness to complete the whole training. The real meditation, as taught by the Buddha, is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, leading to the cessation of all suffering or enlightenment in the here and the now. So this part is very useful. Then coming to Anapanasati, I need to explain a bit. Because Anapanasati is from the Pali word, as you know, Anapana is in and out. So Anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. So breathing in, you maintain awareness. Breathing out, you maintain awareness. Initially, when you are not used to it, you find it not so straightforward or easy, because you will come to realize that free mind, your natural state of mind, because it's so heedless with the mental hindrance, split second, you are lost in thought. You cannot maintain that mindfulness of the in and out breath before you even can do it or recall doing the mindfulness of the in and out breath. Your thought wanders off. But initially, it's like that, where your spiritual faculties are not developed, you cannot silence your mind. The mental hindrance hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So what happens is very natural for people who are not trained. So in developing Anapanasati, you need to have some form of patience. Every time you wander off, bring your attention back to the breath, then start again. Breathing in, away. Breathing out, away. Until the Anapanasati stabilizes, means you are able to develop it, means your mindfulness of the in and out breath can become consistent, means you are able to do it. Then you need to stabilize this Anapanasati, means the mindfulness of the in and out breath has to be done until it is very, very stable and very clear. Means most of the time your mind can stay there, anchored to the breath, because if it's with the breath, it's always in the present moment. That's why when you are able to be aware of the in and out breath, you are without thought within the present moment. That's how sati develops. Sati is awareness without thought. That is what sati is. So when you are mindful of whatever, in and out breath can be one of the objects of meditation. Even your rising and falling of the abdomen is the same. Chanting or hand movement, dynamic meditation is the same. You anchor your mindfulness to that movement. As long as the mind and the movement move as one, you establish sati. So the key training is to anchor the mind to an object of meditation so that you can develop mindfulness on the object of meditation. In this case, it's the breathing. So you just do. Every time you wander off, bring it back. Every time you wander off, bring it back. Sooner or later, if you are patient enough, you will be able to do it and stabilize it. Then you just do it. As you do it, you will start to feel the calmness and the peacefulness arising. Yeah, when you are in sati, mindful of the in and out breath, you don't have thought. There is just an awareness. The awareness will make you very calm, very peaceful. Then you need to continue to relax into all mind state that arise, then stabilize this anapanasati until it develops the initial long breath. Like the breath is a very long in breath, then very long out breath. So this in and out breath, initially it will develop until very long. Long means you are able to establish that mindfulness. Then your breath gains strength. Then your prajna, or what they call prajna, is that type of when you do anapanasati, you draw that type of prajna energy from the nature. Because of your mindfulness, you can draw. Then it starts to gain strength, stabilize. Then you will experience the calm mind, leading to piti. Piti is what they call a very peaceful type of mind state. We call it the calmness that arises through training the mind to be aware, mindful, without thought. And this is what they call the spiritual calmness or spiritual peacefulness. And sometimes they call it rapture. Rapture because it's like make you very feel very good, like it rapture in your mind. So you will be able to experience it most of the time if you are good in developing anapanasati, and it can come very fast. So as piti develop, you continue to relax into it and let it stabilize. Then later on, you will experience very strong bliss. They call it the blissfulness of mind, sukhang. So from piti, it become more refined. You experience sukhang. When you experience sukhang, you feel very good. The breath like very slow, very long, and very calm. Then when you are used to it, this anapanasati will continue to develop. But when sukhang arises, don't attach, don't cling, don't every time look for it. Just understand these are natural, dependent, originating state of mind. Condition arising, cause of phenomena. When there is condition for it to stabilize, it will arise. And when it arises, you relax into it, it will become more and more quiet, more and more quiet. Then after you are able to relax into it and allow it to be, then this anapanasati will slow down. Slow down until your breathing become very subtle, like normal breathing. It's like you hardly breathe, but actually there is still breathing, very subtle. Then later on, you actually breathe internally. You no need to draw that breath, very subtle, shallow breathing. During that time, it's like you don't have a breath. It's like you find it very difficult to continue with the anapanasati. They call it, the mind has become so quiet, so subtle, and so still. But because your mindfulness is not refined enough, not stable enough to detect it. So at that time, most people who don't understand cultivator, they fail to progress. They get themselves entangled and stagnate there. What happens is when you reach that state of subtle breathing, don't panic. It's a good sign, in fact. It's a sign of good progress. So what you should do is just let it be. Stay with the silent mind, awareness. Maintain awareness. Don't do anything. As long as you maintain awareness, that free mind that is just aware, will become mindful again on its own. So when that happens, it means the mind has entered the deep. Means the mind doesn't need anything to hold it. No need the breath. Then when that mind has entered the deep, you realize wherever that mind is located, it becomes very sensitive. That mindfulness become more refined. Then all of a sudden you realize the very subtle breathing also you can detect them. It's like you can stay there. During that time you will be very calm, very peaceful, very quiet, very still. And there is this awareness within. Then the movement between awareness and the thinking is very clear. You can see them. So continue to stabilize it, silence everything, and let it stay there. Then after that, your mind that has entered sati technically don't need any object of meditation to be in the state of awareness. So whatever method and technique you use is the same, even rising, falling, when it becomes very subtle, don't do anything. Don't go and do sitting, touching, forget about it. Don't verbalize anymore. Just silence your mind and stay there until mind enters sati, until it stabilizes. Then after that, your sati like magnify. Any slightest movement, you can detect them. Then whatever activity, you silence your mind and you move this awareness to whichever place within your body, it can detect. You move it to the heart, it can detect the heartbeat. Then it can also detect whatever vibration there is within the area, even your brain, everything. You can play with it and find out for yourself. Especially you're doing lying down meditation, you can move the awareness. You can just let it run. Then wherever it like locate itself, you just let it be and silent. Be with it. Then this awareness nature will start to grow, will start to stabilize. Just aware, aware, aware. Don't try to know. Then your meditation will progress. So this is how you can actually develop it well. So most of the time, people who don't have the understanding, they don't know what to do. They think meditation is just to continue to hold on to the object of meditation. If they do that, it's like swimming. When you continue to depend on the float, to swim, you will never understand the real swimming, which is without the float. So sati that is naturally there, the free mind in sati, is the same as swimming without a float. But if your sati needs something to anchor, it's like you are holding on to something. Like you are assisted by a float to stay afloat. So it's different. So the real understanding of sati, the free mind, is when you don't need anything to anchor that mind. That mind itself is in sati. And when your mind is in sati, whatever you do is in sati. Every moment of seeing is in sati. Smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, they are all in sati. That's why their daily mindfulness become different. The specific phenomenal awareness, all of your senses, they become very different. Every moment of sense experience, whether seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, they are with sati. During that time, your daily mindfulness is very stable. All of your action and movement, your awareness is vivid. Then specific phenomenal awareness, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomenon, your mind can be vivid. Yeah. So the trained mind that has stabilized, the mind that has entered sati is very different. That mind is ever mindful, heedful. So the training needs to be understood. and develop until your sati or mindfulness become very stable. Not until your daily mindfulness stabilizes. You are most of the time aware and heedful throughout the day. Your meditation cannot take off. The real meditation only starts when your daily mindfulness has stabilized. So this part, make a note. Okay, we go back. We finish this one. Okay, summary of cultivation. So 3.4, this is very important. First is to train the mind to be heedful. And I repeat, heedfulness has two parts. Ever mindful, constantly meditating. Based on Dhammapada verse 23. So to be ever mindful, you need to train the mind to be mindful first. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful until the mind enters sati. Then use that mind that is ever mindful to meditate, to cultivate noble eightfold path. Then you combine these two, you become heedful. You can do it throughout the day. Initially, your waking moments, you will be destined for enlightenment, because according to the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, confirm all this. Verse 21 said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead, and heedlessness is the path to the dead. So with this understanding, we should be very, very determined not to be heedless. We should intend on heedfulness, like all the wise ones following Dhammapada verse 22. Distinctly knowing the big difference between heedfulness and heedlessness, the wise one will intend on heedfulness. And when they do that, they rejoice in the realm of the Aryas, means they are destined for enlightenment. The Aryas are enlightened beings, noble ones. So this initial training to be heedful is most important. All meditation must start from there. Otherwise, you are not doing it correctly. And to be heedful, you need to train your mind to be mindful first. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful until mind enters sati. Then use it to meditate, to cultivate noble eightfold path. Meditate means develop awareness to understand. Then the noble eightfold path, you follow it, it will unfold. Starting in right view with regards to what? Law of karma. So with the silent mind, meditative mind, ever mindful throughout the day, you develop the observation of life. You develop the understanding of what life is. Then you will come to understand what law of karma is all about. You can put it to test. You can investigate into it. It will stand up to investigation. Then you realize everything is dependent, originating, condition, arising, causal, phenomena. Then there is this moral causation, mental intention involved behind every thought process. Every moment of sense experience, there is this content of consciousness that comes through the thought process. And within the content, the chetana or mental intention is the most important. So if you don't have right view, your mental intention is all with the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. That's why right view is most important. And when you understand that there is this law of karma, following the advice of the Buddha, you have to make sure you take care of karma. Where the Buddha said, you have to reflect every day. We are all born of karma. add to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So our entire life depends on karma because we are born of it. We inherited all of it. Then we are conditioned and supported by our karma every moment, every instant. Then we are what we are because of our karma whenever we arise in a form of mind. So all this understanding will drive us to have the right view to cultivate. Means if karma plays such a great role in our life, what must we do? We must take care of karma. And how do we take care of karma? We need to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good. Because law of karma is you reap what you sow. You reap the fruit of evil, then you will suffer. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. If you plant the seed of wholesomeness, you will root the fruit of wholesomeness. If you plant the seed of evil through heedlessness, you will reap the fruit of heedlessness or evil. So your karma will fall. You will be afflicted if you don't take care of karma. That's the reason why we have to train our mind to be ever mindful, to be able to take care of karma, means to enable us to keep our precepts. Our precepts depend on mindfulness, so that we can observe our mind, our mental intention. We have to understand what constitutes evil. The evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion constitute evil. So when we are mindful of these evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then we can develop the appropriate foreign effort to abandon them. Whatever wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has a reason, we can arise the right effort to abandon them. And there are five ways to do it. Then after that, when you have developed the understanding and the wisdom, you can be mindful, and at the moment when you are aware with the understanding, you can arise the second right effort to prevent the wrong thought or wrong speech and wrong action from arising. And that second right effort needs the initial wisdom, the understanding. But when you see it clearly that these are evil roots that condition evil activity, make you evil, cause your karmic nature to fall, cause you to develop negativity of karmic, then your life will be affected. So if that is not what you want, you better wake up and determine to avoid all evil, determine to cultivate heedfulness, to be aware, to be mindful, so that you can handle life. Then the third right effort is the development of wholesomeness, cultivation of the right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in you. So you have to reflect, contemplate, and develop the ability to understand what constitutes right thought, right speech, and right action. And from there, only you can arise the right effort to cultivate them one by one. Then the fourth right effort is to refine upon whatever right thought, right speech, and right action that you have developed until it becomes very complete. Means you are able to refine and perfect it until it becomes a part of you. It's like the virtue in you. So this four right effort is the beginning of purification. Initially is to purify your conduct, your morality, sila visuddhi. So when you can do that, then only you can move on with your cultivation. Without the purification of sila or morality, you cannot take care of karma. You cannot have the good condition to cultivate, to meditate in the good life. So the beginning of change is the beginning of cultivation of sati, mindfulness, leading to heedfulness, followed by the purification of morality, with the forward effort that I taught you just now, starting with right view. And right view, the first one is always law of karma. So understand all this. Yeah. Then how to avoid all evil? The Buddha said, keep the precept. So precept is very important. Sila visuddhi, purification of precept or morality, starts with having the mindfulness to keep your precepts. You look at the precept, the way it is worded is very beautiful, very profound. The Buddha said, we undertake the training rule. He always say training rule means you are training yourself to abstain from what? First precept is to abstain from killing fellow living being. Yeah. But you can also add in causing harm and killing of fellow living beings. Yeah. Even causing harm is bad enough, the coming. Yeah. And of course, causing suffering and misery will be worse. And suffering can be mental suffering, misery, physical suffering. So this word panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, the last few words after panatipata, viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, this one is repeated for all the five precepts. The meaning is we undertake the training rules to abstain from panatipata, means killing fellow living being, or causing harm or suffering and misery to fellow living being. So this training rule is very useful, very important. Then adina dana viramani sikha padang samadhi yami, the second precept. So we undertake the training rule to abstain from stealing or misappropriating or taking things that don't belong to us without proper permission. Means you didn't do it the society's way or the nature's moral standard. This is to avoid selfishness, craving, desire, possessiveness, cunningness. So all these are the evil roots. Roots of all evil make you evil. When you do all those, means you violate the precept. It constitutes major evil. Then in future, you reap what you sow. People will steal from you, cheat you, deceive you, take advantage of you. Is that what you want? If that is not what you want, then make sure you keep your precepts. So you continue the third, the fourth, and the fifth, you understand. And all these precepts constitute major evil because you check them, like first precept. Why must we undertake the training rules to abstain from killing and causing harm or misery to fellow living beings? Who will do this type of thing? Who will kill, who will harm, who will cause suffering? It's always the deluded people, the angry and violent people, and the selfish people. They have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why this constitute major evil, and you reap what you sow. Means in future, if you do this to people, fellow living beings, in future, when you have the condition, you become the victim. People will kill you, hurt you, harm you, and cause suffering and misery to you. Do you want your life? You decide. If that is not what you want, you better be serious about life. Wake up. Be heedful. Never to do this. If you don't like whatever you do to people, to be done to you, then you better don't do these evil things to people. You have to avoid all evil. That's what the advice of the Buddha is. Failing to avoid all evil will lead to karmic repercussion, karmic friction. So this aspect of sila, very important. Sila visuddhi, purification of sila or morality. And that is the first cultivation. When sila is being developed, then it will give you the good life because you have started to follow the advice of the Buddha. When you keep your precept, it's like wearing masks. You protect yourself, you protect others. And that is what will transform your life. Because keeping precept is avoiding karmic negativity, avoiding harming others, causing suffering to others. And through that, you protect your karmic nature. Your karmic nature will not fall. So instead of only protect yourself and protect others, you also protect yourself. That's why keeping of precept is a meritorious action. It's considered very, very high merit. And you can keep your precept until it's pure, means you don't violate it. Life after life, you become very beautiful. That virtue will protect you. That sila visuddhi, purification of morality or sila, will keep you safe, happy, peaceful, and full of blessings, merits. And it's a very wonderful merit. So keeping our precept is one of the 10 meritorious action, and is a very, very high quality merits. People don't understand. You have your precept well kept, life after life, you become very different. Your life become very different. You are like very blessed. Then very lucky, everything go your way. Because you keep your precept means you don't commit karmic negativity, you don't violate the moral code, then there is no condition for friction to happen to you. So your life is so beautiful. People won't kill you, won't cheat you, won't deceive you, won't harm you. Your spouse, whenever you arise, they will not cheat on you. There is no such thing as getting hurt through sexual misconduct. Then people will not lie to you and deceive you. Then because you keep the fifth precept, you will have condition to continue to keep that precept. Then you won't meet people who violate that precept and cause havoc to the world. So all these are very beautiful. So sila is very useful. So we move on. Train the mind to be heedful via puja and devotional practice, a daily religious routine, to be useful. So during puja, or what we call devotional practice, we should do it until it becomes part of our daily religious routine. In fact, it's a good practice. Every religious ceremony, the Buddha recommend that we have puja. That's why we have the pre-puja, the post-puja. And these are handed down and taught by the Buddha. And it's very important, very useful. That's why we do it. Then on your own, last time when I was cultivating, the first thing I will do is, early morning when I wake up, I will do my puja, short one. Then after that, I meditate for a while, and I radiate merits, share merit, transfer merit. Then I do the closing puja. Then before I sleep, I do the same. And whenever I have condition to do like Sunday service or what, I will do. I will participate in the chanting. And in the chanting is very beautiful, it's puja chanting. First, you get to do almost all the 10 meritorious action when you attend the Sunday class or Sunday service. You reach the temple, the shrine hall, you immediately go in and pay your respect. Then do your bowing. So paying of respect, reverential salutation is a meritorious action. Then you chant. you chant the salutation to the Buddha, which is to recall to mind who the Buddha is, and that itself is very virtuous and give you faith. It strengthen your faith. Let you recall to mind the great teaching of Lord Buddha, the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, and you chant the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, so that you know what the Triple Gem are and why you take refuge in the Triple Gem and the meaning of refuge. After that, normally you renew your five precepts. All these are very meritorious. Then the chanting gives you the faith, the vibration, the sadha leading to virya. And you do it mindfully, the spiritual faculties are developed. So puja and devotional practice has this value. Then they also chant the significance of all the puja offerings so that you understand the deep meaning behind all these puja offerings, like the offering of clear water, incense, candle lights, then fruits, flowers. They have different meanings. Then there are also other very rather meaningful offering. Sometimes they offer ropes. Sometimes they offer requisite to the monks. So all these are offerings. And when you do it mindfully, with awareness, with sati, with understanding, puja can be very meaningful. Then closing puja, you share merit, you transfer merit. Then in between, you meditate. Normally they have short session of metta or loving kindness meditation. For us, we have half an hour awareness based meditation, which is very important, very useful. And this one is a great field of mind. You can really calm your mind down, develop the ability to be just aware. The free mind that is just silent and aware. Very, very wholesome. The marriage is very hard. Do you understand the meaning of it? According to the Buddha, to have a moment of pure thought without the evil root is so pure, so wholesome. Whatever merits you do, you cannot match a moment of pure thought without any evil roots. That is a pure mind. And to have a moment of pure thought is so beautiful. But when you can meditate for half an hour, almost the entire half an hour, you are in that state of purity, pure awareness, pure thought. That itself is really, really wholesome, beautiful. That's why one session of our Tuesday class or Thursday class or even Sunday sharing is wholesomeness is beyond what you can imagine. You do it with understanding. You can develop it with full attention and mindfulness and awareness. It's really wholesome. And it will transform you. It will allow you to progress very beautifully. So all these are very meaningful. So puja has its beauty. So the 10 marital section we go through, you can make offering, puja offering, or offering to monk, whatever, or make donation. So dana is one of the marital section. You keep your precept, another marital section. Then you meditate, another meritorious action. So dana, sila, bhavana. Then after that, you listen to dhamma. It's also meritorious action. Then you straighten your view. It's also another meritorious action. Then you share merits. You transfer merits. Then after that, you can develop what they call service to the community. Come back already. Yeah. So everything will fall into place. So If you do all this with understanding, you get to perform the 10 meritorious actions almost every session throughout the day. Then, when you continuously develop this cultivation as a religious routine, you become very different. You become very, very wholesome. And your cultivation will take off because it's very beautiful, the 10 meritorious actions. And with the awareness-based meditation that you can develop through this cultivation and understanding, you will really become very beautiful as a cultivator. That's why what we share here, what we learn here is so different from normal teaching that you see elsewhere. It's not really easy to have all this. So you should rejoice with your good affinity with the Triple Gem and your great karma. So make full use of whatever you have. So when you can integrate into a religious routine, you become beautiful. Then whatever you do after the puja, you determine to be aware, develop daily mindfulness. Everything you do, whether you are at home doing your household chores or preparing yourself for breakfast or whatever, or even preparing yourself for the day where you need to go to the washroom, clean yourself up, brush your teeth, bathe or whatever, then answer nature's call or do your whatever household chores, do it mindfully. Then whatever you do throughout the day, if you can be mindful within your home environment, that is a very good beginning. Then after that, when you come down from your upstairs or whatever, if you see your altar, pay your respect mindfully again. Then go for your breakfast or whatever. Then after that, you need to drive to office. Be mindful of all the process, how you actually reach out for your car key on the alarm to unlock your car, then how you carry your whatever office equipment, laptop or bag or whatever, mindfully everything. Then how you come out of the house, how you actually lock your door and all those things. Then when you move your hand to slide the grill or move the grill, be mindful. Then when you enter your car, how your hand approach the handle, pull it away. Every movement away, every action away. Then how you sit, how you check on the mirror. Then how you on the ignition. If it's automatic, how your hand go and on that auto switch. Be mindful. Then how you hold your steering, how you reverse your car, how you on your auto gate and all those things, be mindful. Then leading to the office all the way. And even your working moment, working hours. If you can do that as a religious routine, you will progress very fast. Your meditation will take off. It will become very different. So coming back to a summary of cultivation, training the mind to be heedful, you need puja, which I have described, devotional practice, then combine it with a daily religious routine will be very useful. Then B is for those whose spiritual faculty are still not developed. You can use mind sweeping method and metta to decondition your heedless thinking, which I have read just now. Then once you decondition your heedless thinking, your mind become very quiet, very peaceful and tranquil, because you just feel and relax. You no longer think. When you just feel and relax, it will decondition your heedless thinking. Then to start thinking again, the momentum to move it is more difficult. You need more energy. That's why mind sweeping method combined with metta is a very good skillful means to decondition your heedless thinking. And this mind sweeping method also will enable you to develop the training of the mind to be at the location you want it to be. When you want it to be at the forehead, it will be there. Means away there. Relax. Silent. When you just relax and away, you don't think. So you sweep it out. Relax. Away. From the forehead down to the facial muscle or eye muscle, the facial muscle. Keep on relaxing. Feel relaxed. Feel relaxed. No more thinking. So after about 5-10 minutes, you will decondition your entire healer's thinking. Then your mind like become very quiet, very still. So that is a very good training. Yeah? Then when you do metta, it bring about inner well-being. You wish well-being to yourself and to all others. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy. Be well and happy. Then you extend it to your loved ones, then to all beings within the vicinity and the entire nation, then slowly to the planet, then the solar system, the galaxy, and the Milky Way, and the whole universe. So all this will bring about the training of the mind to be aware, leading to inner peace and inner well-being. Then after that, to stabilize this mindfulness, you can try anapanasati if you are used to it. Otherwise, whatever skillful means that you have, you can try it. And the easiest way is to follow the four support for awareness-based meditation. Just relax, silent everything, and maintain awareness for as long as you can. The third support is 24 hours for as long as you can. So first support is relax. Whatever happens, relax into it. All mind state, relax. Feel yourself at ease. Then maintain awareness. Means don't think. Don't do anything. Don't try to know. Just maintain awareness. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Whatever tactile that arises through the senses, aware, finish. Then whatever sankara or thinking, if it's still going on, let it be. Do not fight it, do not control it, do not like want to suppress it or stop it. No, just let it be. Then it will slow down. It will slow down. It will lose its momentum. The very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought, because it needs energy, thought energy. If you don't give it any meaning, it will not be able to continue. So see that sankara activity slowing down until it becomes very quiet and very still. Then you will understand what your true mind is. It will return to its original state of tranquility, stillness, the silent mind, before the stirring, before the reaction of mind, before the sankara activity. So you need to realize your true mind, your original mind, before the arising of heedless thinking. So all this is meditation. It become very easy and very beautiful. So you can try whatever. If I find the four support easiest, is there all the method and technique, but it depends, because some people are more suited to certain type of ojjaka meditation, that they could have done it for a long time, maybe past life and sometimes this life also. So you can use it, no harm. But if you have developed the spiritual faculty, your mind is in the meditative state straight away, then the four support is the easiest and the fastest. It takes you to the true mind straight away, silent mind. You avoid all the thought-based meditation. You just relax, maintain awareness, then the mind settle down. And the mind will go back to its original state of stillness, tranquility, and awareness. That is your true mind. Realize that, stabilize that, stay with it, then use it to meditate. So that part, which is anapanasati, is C, or the four support, or whatever skillful means. Then after that, you continue the training by doing the mindfulness of the four postures. This one is a must because the Buddha actually advised the monk in the Kayanupassana training. After Anapanasati means train your mind to be aware and mindful, you should develop the second category of cultivation of Kayanupassana, which is mindfulness of the four postures. Standing aware, sitting aware, walking aware, lying down aware. Then after that, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement in the present moment, or daily mindfulness with clear comprehension training. So this daily mindfulness technically is to connect all the intermediate action and movement between the four postures to make it into a complete daily mindfulness training. So DME is a must, daily mindfulness cultivation. That's why after your morning puja, when you wake up, or before you sleep, in between, you have to cultivate this daily mindfulness awareness. Then once hit full already, means you are able to train your mind to be ever mindful, then use this mind that is heedful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path or the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, which finally accumulate into the cultivation of mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Fourth Noble Truth, mindfulness of Noble Eightfold Path. So three turning of the Four Noble Truths followed by the four foundation of mindfulness or satipatthana practice will complete the whole training. So this one, once you understand the summary of cultivation, you can do it. So to meditate, to cultivate is very easy if you are guided by all this understanding. So training the mind to be heedful is a must. To be heedful, you need to start with mindfulness, stabilize it to be ever mindful, then develop the spiritual faculty through the puja, devotional practice. It also includes the training of the mind to be mindful, the cultivation of the 10 meritorious action. All these are very, very beautiful practices with a lot of wholesomeness that it let you understand who is the Buddha and how important his teaching is. That's why you can develop the faith, sadha, virya, sati, the urgency and all those things. And all the essential dhamma that he has taught you, they are all inside there. Then the chanting has a lot of beautiful dhamma for you to learn. And it stabilizes your faith there through chanting. The vibration actually open up your heart and make you feel calm and composed. Then that faith will drive you. And that training to be aware, to be mindful, you must develop it. That's why Mind Supreme Method followed by Metta, Anapanasati of the four support of awareness-based meditation, then daily mindfulness. Then after that, cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, three turning of the Four Noble Truths, the four foundation of mindfulness. That will complete the entire cultivation. Okay, with that, we move on to the chart. This chart is very important and very comprehensive. So hopefully with the complete detailed explanation, by now you look at this chart, it becomes very easy. So to understand this chart, you must go to the center circle. You must understand what is meditation as taught by the Buddha. So what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha? First, you must understand the definition. Meditation is to decondition one's heedless thinking. We are training the mind to be heedful. So first part, decondition the heedless thinking. The reason why I use this is because most people doesn't know why they are heedless, why they think a lot. And the reason being, you don't have the spiritual faculty. And since most people don't have spiritual faculty, that's why meditation is to decondition one's heedless thinking first. We are training the mind to be heedful. And to do that, you can start off with the mind sweeping method combined with metta. But you have the spiritual faculty, you don't need. You straight away go into the four support, relax, maintain awareness, then you will be heedful. Initially, of course, you will be mindful, then stabilize it, ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path or the insight into the three universal characteristics of nature to cultivate wisdom, awakening, to liberate the mind so that it is at peace with all life situations. So when you understand this definition, you will be very focused in your cultivation. You will not debate. When people teach you all the thought-based meditation, you know you debated already. Because you are not training the mind to be heedful, to be aware. You are not deconditioning your heedless thinking. You are not developing your spiritual faculty. So all this, you will understand. So after the definition, you move on to the next one. How to develop the five spiritual faculty with strong determination to overcome the five mental hindrances. So this one I already taught you, puja. Puja, when you chant, it gives you faith. Because when you participate in all this religious ceremony and service, even like our classes and our whatever, what they call spiritual activity, we develop faith. We cultivate the 10 meritorious action. We train our mind, we develop mindfulness and everything that is related to the essential Dhamma training. So once you understand who the Buddha is and how unique and special a being he is, your faith in him, the first spiritual faculty, will be unshakable. Because the Buddha is not only an enlightened being, he is fully enlightened, perfect in virtue and wisdom. To have such a being to be your teacher, your guide, you must count your blessing. So your faith in him will be unshakable, very strong. Then when you understand how beautiful his teaching is, it will drive you to cultivate. Because you see the importance of this teaching, this cultivation. Without this teaching, you will suffer. You will be heedless. You will entangle your life. You will become afflicted, miserable. So Saddha Virya can be developed easily. Then when you know this is important, the next training is to be mindful. All your puja activity lead to mindfulness. Your religious routine lead to mindfulness. So this way of training, formal meditation and informal meditation, will stabilize your sati. Once your sati is stabilized, you become ever mindful. Then that state of mind that is ever mindful will develop samadhi, the stability of it. Then with sati and samadhi, the third and fourth spiritual faculty, you can see things as they are and awaken or develop the panya or the wisdom. So the five spiritual faculty, the moment they are there, it will help you overcome the five mental hindrances. So you have to develop the five spiritual faculty with strong determination. You see the importance of this. Then the next thing to know is to come down here to understand what are the five spiritual faculty. So like I have gone through with you, Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya. The English equivalent is that faith in the Buddha and his teaching, spiritual zeal or tenacity or resolve. Then Sati is mindfulness or awareness. Then Samadhi is the collectedness and unwavering mind, or the Sati that is very stable. Then Panya is wisdom. Then you also need to know what are the five mental hindrances so that you can be mindful of them. When the mental hindrances are there, means you know your spiritual faculty is not stable. So what are the five mental hindrances? They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and skeptical doubt. Means you don't have the faith, the confidence. You don't have the understanding. That's why you start to doubt. So once you have all this understood, meditation becomes very easy. So the technique to do it is like what we went through. Puja, mind stream method, combine metta, anapanasati, four posture, daily mindfulness. Then use this heedful mind to cultivate the three turning of the four noble truth and the four foundation of mindfulness, exactly as per summary. Then the final result is this one. This one is the final result. This one. Always remember, meditation is about realizing the wisdom to be at peace via accepting the reality of the moment. All the other thing is a deviation. You meditate not to become famous, egoic, to develop psychic ability, special ability. No, it's to develop the pure understanding, wisdom, to liberate the mind, to be at peace with all things, anytime, any place, anywhere, under any circumstances. So this will cover the whole spectrum of meditation. Then you can move on to the last three at the bottom. So the way to do it is, after you have developed the training of the mind to be heedful, you silence your mind and maintain awareness throughout the day. Then this daily mindfulness with the silent mind in full awareness means you are, when you are heedful throughout the day, it has the ability to insight into phenomena, into the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta, to realize the unreality of the five aggregates of form and mind. Means they are dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, no reality, not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why the universal characteristics of anicchang or impermanent. Then when you attach and cling and want things your way, which is not nature's way, you suffer when you cannot get what you want. Because all this happening in the universe, they follow nature's law. That's why it's dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of an all, or following nature's five pancha niyama, universal order of nature, especially the three spiritual universal order, law of karma, karma niyama, law of mind, citta niyama, and law of dhamma or truth, dhamma niyama. Go back. I just finished that one. So after that, you have to move on to this side. So this side insight into the three universal characteristics, then you come to this side. This side is where you do your puja offering, your puja. So this is to develop the five spiritual faculty to overcome the five mental hindrances, like I have taught you just now. Then you train yourself with the mind stream method to decondition the heedless thinking through feeling and relaxation without thinking. Then if you want to combine with metta, you can. Then when you do this, you will be able to actually train your mind to be initially just aware, without thought. Because when the heedless thinking is no more there, it's just aware without thought. But the problem with most people who do this mind stream method is, after that you don't do, the heedless thinking come back. Because not stabilize it. So to stabilize it means you move on to the next, the next box. You come on to here. So this one is how to develop heedfulness. You have to cultivate kaya anupassana via anapanasati to stabilize it. Then the daily mindfulness of four posture and daily mindfulness of all action and all movement in the present moment. followed by clear comprehension, sati sampajana. So this is how you do it, the complete training. So when you understand this chant, you will understand what meditation is. Okay? So we at least finish this chapter 35 and 36. What's the time now? Oh, still earlier, 9:52. Okay, I will continue with lesson 37. We start lesson 37. Lesson 37, page 183. Understanding the three conditions for Bratio's Dhammacharya. This is very useful for those who are quite new, who have not read the website explanation of how the website came about. You have to pay attention to this. In order not to arise any unnecessary misunderstanding or karmic consequence, Bratio had been reluctant to share his Dhamma understanding until about 9 years ago. That was when this book was first published, the first edition. 9 means the year 2013, because I started in 2004. I was invited by Sister Yun Chan. So this book was written in 2013. So now you add 7 more years, it's 16 years ago. When he was approached 3 times by a very sincere sister of the Dhamma, she is Sister Yun Chan, asking him to share his rather good understanding of the Dhamma. Bratio then contemplated and finally consented or agreed to share the Dhamma, but with the following 3 conditions. So you listen. I say initially call it a Dhamma sharing instead of a Dhamma talk, because a talk could be like a one-way traffic, not offering any chance or having a fair discussion to clarify matter from the audience. Also, sharing means there is no authority over one another, and as Dhamma friends, we are here to share our understanding of the Dhamma with mutual respect for each other's cultivation. There is, I respect you for what you are, and hopefully you can also respect me for what I am. So that's the first condition, which is very good. So that's the reason why I always share, I always address the Kayamita as our class are all Dhamma sharing, because we are Kayamitas. Kayamitas are Dhamma friends who walk the path of Dhamma. We cultivate together, we share Dhamma, we have our fellowship and do all those things that Kayamitas do. The second condition is no right and no wrong. If it is beneficial to use, to you, use it. If it's not, have an open mind, because we are not here to argue about right and wrong. Right and wrong is just a relative measurement or opinion as expressed by someone according to their views and opinion, and it's not something absolute, means absolute truth. As such, it is not beneficial at all. If we are not careful, it may lead to unnecessary misunderstanding and argument. So to avoid all this, we have an open mind. No right, no wrong. We just share understanding. We respect each other. Then number 3 is to have an open mind to listen attentively and take or make use of whatever that is useful and beneficial to progress along the path of Dhamma. Also, do not quote me, because it is very dangerous. If you quote me based on what I said without understanding what I meant, it can get both of us into unnecessary trouble. So this one you find out yourself. So my advice is just say, Bratio share with us his understanding of the Dhamma, which we have come to appreciate a lot, because the Dhamma, which is very difficult and profound, which is a very difficult and profound topic, can be made so simple and taught to us with such clarity that we can so easily relate it to our daily life. As always pointed out by Brother Teo, according to Brother Teo, life itself is the meditation, and life itself is where the Dhamma is, and life itself is our greatest teacher. Then Brother Teo always said, truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. So why can't we see? For those who see, they always see. So this one, hopefully people can understand. When I say truth is everywhere, means the universal characteristics, which are the truth, they are everywhere. Anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. If you are not mindful, you don't have the understanding, the clarity, you cannot see. If eyes, you cannot see. You are still like blind. To see, you must have the silent mind, sati, awareness, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. Then after that, you always see. Yes, the characteristic is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Every moment, every instant, you see them. Everything is just like that. Not until you have that wisdom, understanding, and ability, stability of mindfulness, you can never understand what I said and said. So this part is very important. Then we move on to the next paragraph. Wisdom cannot be learned or taught where it's not a rigid knowledge. Wisdom needs to be awakened to or realized because it's an overall understanding. Dhamma is about realization, and it can only be understood by the wise each for themselves. No one else can understand it for us. At different level, wisdom is realized differently. If you can understand the deep meaning behind the Surangama saying, perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This is the most beautiful. Then you would have some form of wisdom born of understanding the mind, Dhamma. For everything is conditioned arising, dependent originating, and mind make ade. So not so real. It is only the mundane mind creating the phenomenal world through its own mental perception and consciousness. Like the following Zen proverb, or sayings. So 1.2 are the three levels of seeing. Kan san, si san. This is the first level of seeing, mundane seeing. Then the center one is Kan san, bu si san. This is the direct seeing. So mundane seeing is when you see the mountain, the mundane people will say, yeah, there is a mountain. But when the enlightened one, through the direct seeing, when they see that thing, there is no word, no concept. So he said, where got mountain? No mountain. Mountain is not mountain. Our mountains are not mountain. So Kan san, bu si san. Then the third level of seeing, mountain are mountain again, because you are able to see things as they are. Means the reality is such. If a non-enlightened being see, it will be mundane seeing. If the enlightened being see, it will be direct seeing. That's why seeing things as they are. So the third phase of seeing, no more argument, no right, no wrong. Thing is just the way it is, suchness seeing. So first you see mountain as mountain. This is conventional or mundane seeing. Then you see mountain as not mountain. This is seeing with the above Surangama saying or understanding. Because when you perceive that form, that is your consciousness perceiving. Whereas its non-perception is wisdom, means direct seeing, When you don't perceive anything, you see things as they are. That is wisdom. That's why the mundane seeing is concept, knowledge, not the direct seeing. That one can never awaken. So that saying under the Surangama Sutta is so beautiful. Perception of form is consciousness, whereas this non-perception is wisdom. And that sentence was so beautiful, so wonderful. When I first read it, I was full of joy. My nature really opened up with joy. And I tell myself, this is the real Dhamma. How many people can understand that? Very rare. Only the enlightened being. And finally, you see mountains still as mountain again. This is suchness seeing. This is seeing things as they are, suchness seeing, with understanding that everything is suchness or what is. So you are able to accept things as they are, hence able to accommodate both the conventional and ultimate reality to live life with wisdom and understanding. Means you can accord and flow, no more problem, no need to end up with right and wrong, all these things. So this aspect is the most beautiful. Yeah? Okay, I think we stop here. So we stop at 1.2. So we will continue with 1.3 later. So maybe we open up for reporting on meditation and Q&A. You can ask me whatever question you want. It can be based on the meditation or the teaching, the Dhamma. Selina. Okay, Selina.
That's what I want to ask you. Just about form of meditation.
You can. Your mic is very. Okay. Can you speak clearly?
Actually, on the form of meditation. So far as of meditation time, I can hear the sound very clearly, like the washing machine being the washing turning around.
Okay. So what is your question?
My question is that I can even though I'm meditating now, I can hear the sound outside.
I got you. You can hear the washing machine sound when you meditate. So what is your question? Do you have any question?
I'm not disturbed by this. I'm aware that
it's not only you are disturbed by it or not. Do you have any question? What is it that you want to know? Based on what you have reported.
I want to know related to this Zen flower, this mountain. Can you elaborate on this flower?
I already explained just now, but I don't mind repeating it. You have to learn to understand it. So anyway, thank you for your good question, Selina. So you see, I believe I understand what you want to ask, but you don't know how to phrase it. So you try to relate to the three level of seeing the Zen proverb with the machine sound that you hear during the meditation. First thing I must let you understand is, please, this is not knowledge. The three level of Zen seeing proverb is not a knowledge. You don't go and relate to that meditation hearing, then you try to act like you hear that washing machine sound means the concept is there, mundane hearing. Then the next level, you think you don't want to use the word. You think just that thing without word. No, that is just knowledge. You are trying to relate with knowledge. Then the third level, you say, oh, washing machine again. I can accept it. No, even when you say it doesn't affect you, that one got no meaning. Because all this is knowledge. So always remember, what is meditation? From the chart just now I show you. You start from there. Meditation is to train your mind to be heedful, to be aware first. Then stabilize it. Are you doing that? That is more important. Instead of hearing this, hearing that before your sati come in, before you are heedful and aware. No point. Because all this is thought-based meditation. You are really wasting time doing all those things. So what is important is stabilize your sati. That's why I want you to report your meditation. And I realize a lot of people are still caught in thought-based meditation via your subconditioned, and you like to use thinking, knowledge, to believe this is what you understand from the teaching. Then you try to relate it to the thought process. If you do that, you will never progress. That's the reason why I say you can only meditate and progress when you have developed the ability to be aware, ever mindful, heedful, silent. So just do that training first. Then your meditation reporting will be completely different. You will hear differently. You will report differently. You will have joy like Po Cheng Deong. You will understand what that thing is. It's very different, eh, Selina? I hope you can get what I mean. Can you understand?
Yeah, thank you.
Very good. Thanks for your question, Sadhu. So it will help other people also. Always remember, be focused. Means understand what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So meditation is to decondition your heedless thinking, where most people are heedless with the mental hindrance. So do you do that? Then after that, stabilize the awareness. So once you are able to do all this according to that chart, the summary that I given you, you will progress. And you will understand what I mean. And then you will be able to see things differently, hear things differently. And then only the Zen proverb stand out. The Surangama Sutta, that sentence, perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. That one becomes clear to you, based on wisdom, not based on knowledge. Knowledge, no use. You try to analyze, reason, no use, because that is knowledge. It's not based on the direct seeing, the awakening, the understanding. When you have the ability to have the direct seeing, then your mind transforms, you become different. Then that truth that is mentioned in the sutta becomes very clear to you. Then you realize that is what you realize. That was what you realized. After your stability of mindfulness is there, your nature transforms and you see things as they are. You will have the ability to have the direct seeing. You have gone through the normal seeing. Then the direct seeing will awaken you, then you understand. Then after that, the sajna seeing, you also will understand, because as you go through life, you realize that duality is still created by the mundane mind. Right and wrong. Mountain and no mountain. Who say that? The mundane mind interpret that. When you have the understanding already, you see things as they are. Suchness seeing, no right, no wrong, depending on who see. And when you are able to do that, you can be at peace. You can accord and flow. You can accept the reality of the moment. There is no need for argument. So all these are very beautiful. Dhamma. Okay? hopefully everybody can develop that understanding. Yeah? So we should once again thank Selina for the good question, and we should rejoice. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's why you must learn to ask questions. Then I can explain to you and let you understand more. If you don't speak out or ask questions or report your meditation, you will not learn. You will not learn. But there are some who already have the understanding, that's why they keep quiet. They allow people who don't really have the understanding as yet the opportunity to ask and to raise their questioning or reporting of meditation. Okay, so that is Selina. Anybody else?
Yes, Alicia. Yes, I do.
When
you reach, like, there is nothing anymore, like everything becomes so quiet, so still, stay with it. Stabilize that nature. 因为那个 nature 要一阵子来 stabilize 的, 不是这么快的。 你要了解到 好像那个 Mahayana 的 explanation, 了了见性, means you must realize that nature until very, very clear and very stable. And there is a saying in Mahayana, yes, I heard it spoken from somebody who has developed it quite well. He quoted from the sutta, he said, 了了见性常住. So the meaning is very deep. If you can realize during your cultivation as a form of mind that nature clearly, you actually can stay very long. 常住, the meaning is after the form of mind, no more, means your parinibbana or whatever, but because of your bodhisattva vow, you actually can come out, come back again. But you don't have to come back immediately. You can take a long rest. Then you can choose your timing, like my nature, you can choose your timing, the civilization and all those things. So you have to realize that nature clearly, 了了见性常住. So most people who gone through the process, they don't understand what it is. It's like you say hollow, nothing. That in fact is a good stage, because for you to realize that the mind is already very quiet, but the thought come in and analyze, understand. Just like I share with you today when we were traveling, like what happened to Song earlier on. Because when your thought come in, it will analyze. Then, of course, your case is not so serious as analyze. You know this is beautiful. Then you say, your meditation has progressed to the stage that your anapanasati become very clear, very easy. From the instruction I given you, you can just go in and develop the subtlety of anapanasati until the mindfulness becomes so quiet, so still, like nothing, like everything is hollow. Then when you describe it, you laugh, because you don't see the importance of silencing until the mind really enters sati. When the mind really enters sati, it becomes completely different. It becomes just that nature.
then you realize that nature very clearly, very stable. That every movement, every action, every form of mind activity, that nature is there. And that nature is very strong. Then you are always with that nature. And that nature, when it's stabilized, your daily mindfulness not only stabilized, you are always with that nature. And that one, when you can reach that stage, you become very different again. There are a lot of things inside the heart area that transform. At that time also a lot of byproduct is gas. Gas, you tend to fart a lot, yes. But never mind. We are that nature when it's aware that all this toxic thing or whatever, it will start to clear. Then because it activates the movement inside. So the byproduct is gas, and most of this gas is without smell. But you will see them releasing, you will experience them, you will understand them. Then all this is very beautiful, because once you are able to silence your mind and really go in deep, then you will understand all this. Okay, Alicia? Sadhu. Amitabha. Yeah. Let us rejoice. Sadhu. 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 Okay, good. Anything else? 还有什么？
他就是现在，因为我每天都有做 meditation，
<Yeah.
S 2> 然后他就是差不多 every day 的 sitting 都有很有，就是你看到很多东西都不同。
Yeah. Then in the daily life again different. Then in the formal meditation again different. But stabilize that awareness until the mind enters sati and.Liao liao jian xing. The word is liao liao jian xing, this forward. Means clearly illuminating that nature. Realize that nature. Okay. Sadhu. Okay. Anybody else? Anybody else?Okay, then we end, almost 10:30 already. Okay, so let us rejoice one more time, then we end. Sadhu, sadhu.